Can we roll the video?
Ayo manyare dumurga gonbiria gweya bina junuga dile warwa mime Ayo de galela kuma kuro de jangun magang de jodo ba kole de tangi je
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a guinea one.
Nyarfu.
People get guinea worm disease when they drink water from stagnant ponds that have been contaminated by other people who have entered the water supply.
Guinea worm is a debilitating disease. It's caused by a large worm growing inside a human body that penetrates the skin with a terrible sore.
These worms are about a meter long, 2 to 3 feet long.
It leaves a young child, for instance, with the same characteristics as polio. Crippled for life. How many of you have ever had guinea worms? The people who suffered from guinea worm lived in the most remote, isolated, poorest communities in the world. It didn't seem to have any solution, and so it was almost an insurmountable problem. That's why we decided to try to solve it. We eventually visited 23,600 villages in 20 different countries, 3 countries in Asia, 17 countries across the sub-Saharan region of Africa.
The most important thing is that we need to make sure that the system is working, and we need to make a total overhaul.
Don't you people think that we all have a responsibility to the water we drink? To make sure that the water we drink is clean.
See that?
I understand that the children, maybe they don't listen.
Yeah, they don't listen.
But our job as parents is to teach our children.
We have eliminated 99.9%, and we're working on that last few hundred cases in just a few countries. This will be the second disease in the history of the world. It's ever been completely eradicated from the face of the earth.
If you leave one worm, there's the potential for the entire thing to come back, to come back. I'm absolutely confident that guinea worm will be eradicated. The only question is how soon.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Don Hopkins. I'm Vice President for Health Programs at the Carter Center. It's my pleasure to introduce our speakers. Representing the United Kingdom's Department for International Development is the Parliamentary Undersecretary of State for International Development, the Honorable Minister Stephen O'Brien. Former United States President and Carter Center founder, President Jimmy Carter. World Health Organization Director General, Dr. Margaret Chan, and the Deputy Director of Foreign Affairs of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Mr. Laurie Lee. I'd like to thank all of you in the press and our other special guests for attending this morning. I'd ask the press, especially and our guests, to remember that this is a press conference about the eradication of guinea worm disease. We are pleased to have representatives also from the diplomatic community, including ambassadors from the endemic or formerly endemic countries, as well as from other donor nations, including governments of Japan, Nigeria, Oman, and Saudi Arabia. Also in attendance are representatives from the Carter Center UK, the other representatives from the World Health Organization, the British government's Department of International for International Development, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the A.G. Leventis Foundation. The footage in the trailer that you've just seen was taken in 2007 in South Sudan and in Ghana. And I'm pleased to report that in contrast to what you've just seen from Ghana, since May 2000, Ghana has had no more cases of guinea worm disease. When the Carter Center began leading the global campaign to eradicate guinea worm disease in 1986, there were approximately, as you've seen, 3.5 million cases reported in what are now 21 endemic countries. Since then, the total cases have been reduced by 99.9%. Last year, there were less than 1,800 cases remaining, and as of the end of September this year, we were down from 21 to now 4 countries and down to just over or just under 1,000 cases. Guinea worm disease will be the second human disease to be eradicated, the first to be eradicated without a vaccine or a treatment. To date, more than $250 million have been invested in this eradication campaign, and you might contrast that with the cost of the smallpox eradication campaign, which was approximately $300 million a generation ago, not counting for inflation. The Carter Center provides leadership of the global campaign, works with the ministers of health in the endemic countries to help them reduce cases to zero, maintaining surveillance for 1 year after cases have been reduced to zero, at which time the World Health Organization monitors the country and helps them to prepare to be certified that guinea worm disease has been eliminated. And I might explain that countries first interrupt transmission of the disease. The following year would be the first year with zero cases, and only after 3 consecutive years of zero cases with adequate surveillance will they be eligible to be certified as having eliminated the disease by the World Health Organizations. I would emphasize the importance of resources at the end of the campaign when it's getting most expensive, certainly per case, but we'll remind you of the many cases that have been averted, and the need for intensified surveillance at the end of the campaign. At this point, I would introduce again President Carter, who will make a few remarks. He will be followed by the Honorable Minister Stephen O'Brien, and then by the World Health Organization Director General Dr. Margaret Chan, and finally, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's Deputy Director of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Laurie Lee. President Carter.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hopkins. Well, it's a great pleasure and honor for me to come here to London and to acknowledge the partnership that we have with the government of Great Britain and also with the World Health Organization and many others who have participated with the Carter Center over a number of years. We have a policy at our center of undertaking difficult projects, quite often which no one else wants to adopt. And perhaps one of the most vivid examples of this has been with guinea worm, because guinea worm is an ancient disease. It's mentioned in the Holy Bible, and it has been prevalent in many countries in the past. When we began this project of eradicating totally guinea worm from the face of the earth, it was with the knowledge of the difficulty of that project, because only one previous disease in history has been eradicated, and that's smallpox. Coincidentally, when I was president in 1979.
And so we knew what the problems were. The additional effort required was because guinea worm is located in individual isolated villages. And quite often we have found that even the president of a country or the prime minister or the minister of health didn't know about guinea worm, which was fairly prevalent within their own countries because those villages are isolated. The first time I ever saw guinea worm was in a small village in Ghana, not too far from the capital of Accra. And we got there, the village had about 500 people, total population, about 300 of them had guinea worm coming out of their bodies. The parents couldn't go into the fields of work, and the children couldn't even think about going to school. About 20 of them were still lying in their huts, unable to drag themselves to the central place to meet with a visiting president. And I think my most vivid memory of a guinea worm case was a beautiful young woman, about 20 years old, standing at the end of a line, and I thought she was holding a baby in her arms. So I went over to ask her about the baby, and it was not a baby, it was her right breast. And a guinea worm was emerging from a nipple of her breast, which was about this long. And she was later found that year to have 11 other guinea worms emerging from different parts of her body. This brought tears to our eyes. And we had a wealthy banker with us, as a matter of fact, who financed the digging of a well in that village, and we went back a year later, there was no guinea worm. But it's been a long, slow, tedious process of visiting, as you saw on the screen, almost 24,000 villages. And we have had to go to every village. And the heroes of this effort have been the people who live in those villages, who quite often were doubtful about their capability of correcting an affliction that had been prevalent among their ancestors throughout history. And they were also reluctant to acknowledge that their sacred pond was a culprit, because they felt that if the pond hadn't been there that filled up during the rainy season, their village wouldn't have been there. The ancestors wouldn't have lived. So it was kind of an insult to say this disease comes out of your pond. So we've had to do a lot of diplomacy and convincing the people there to take care of their own problems. Well, it's worked. And now almost every nation on earth has eradicated or eliminated guinea worm. And it's very likely that at the end of this year, we'll have guinea worm only in one country. And that's the newest country on earth, South Sudan. And the reason that this is a lingering process is because the war in Sudan has prevented our going into all the villages as early as we would have liked. And now, even in South Sudan, it just happens that the endemic villages that have guinea worm also where localized military conflict still takes place. And it makes it difficult for our volunteers to go in. We are now monitoring 6,000 villages in South Sudan. We have about 12,000 volunteers who work with us, and we're on the verge of eradicating this disease totally from the face of the earth. And once it's gone, and it's absent from a place for at least 3 years, which WHO monitors, then it will never come back. So we hope that in the near future, with the help of DFID and others, and the Gates Foundation, we'll be able to say this is the second disease in the history of Earth that has been totally eradicated. And I would say it has been among the poorest, most isolated, most neglected, quite often the most hopeless people on Earth, who now have new hope that their future will be free of this dreaded disease. So I'm very grateful to Dr. Hopkins, in charge of our program, and to all the others who have been partners with us. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. President, not only for your supportive words and, of course, thoughtful insights, but actually for your very moving and inspirational words, and not least, above all, your practical application solutions to what has been one of the most important initiatives to address the consequence of poverty for some of the most vulnerable populations on our planet. And I would also like to thank the Carter Center for organizing this event. I also want to recognize Margaret Chan, in particular, for finding the time to participate on behalf of the World Health Organization, and to thank Laurie Lee for representing the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Bill Sr., who I remember meeting at the November 07 meeting in Seattle, when that was a very significant announcement on malaria, and the foundation have done and continue to do a sterling job backing the campaign to eradicate guinea worm. And I welcome you all to London, and indeed all of you. So to guinea worm, there is cause for great optimism. But as we are talking about development in some of the most challenging environments we can find, we need to remind ourselves that this is cautious optimism. The reduction in cases achieved steadily from one year to the next is a testament to the tremendous efforts and the dedication of people in many parts of Africa to eradicate this terrible, debilitating disease. That a significant proportion of these results have occurred in the last 3 years demonstrates the power of the common vision that drives the Carter Center. Now, I'm going to leave the statistics very wisely as a politician and the numbers to Don Hopkins. But let's not forget that this progress would not have been possible without the WHO playing their often unsung but often critical certification role in the background. The eradication of guinea worm is within our sights, but it does still remain unfinished business, mainly for the poorest people in remote regions of the remaining 4 endemic countries where the worm persists. It's our unfinished business too. And we know that the final mile can often be the longest part of the journey. The UK's development policy, as many of you know, is all about results. Results which change lives and help people build livelihoods. Now, we've been really impressed by the progress in reducing the number of guinea worm cases, and we are convinced that a concerted and systematic push will help to achieve the eradication goal by 2015. We also know that it is not that straightforward, as the remaining endemic countries have their own set of challenges. However, the Carter Centre has the expertise to help them achieve the goal themselves, and the UK can contribute to that effort. So that's why we've been supporting the Carter Center and WHO to tackle this disease for the last 3 years. And they've had great success with Nigeria, Niger, and more recently Ghana, declared guinea worm free during that time. And with all the travels that any DFID minister undertakes, I've seen it with my own eyes, because it's only when you get out to the villages you see the transformative effect that these programs have on the lives of people, that gives them a future. And the prospect of more countries becoming guinea worm free is there in the next few years. So that is why I am here today to issue a challenge. The UK government will increase and extend its support to guinea worm eradication, which we believe can be achieved by 2015. The Carter Centre has told us what the budget shortfall is to make this happen. And the UK will fill up to a third of this financing gap, provided others step forward and fill the other two-thirds. We offer to make a serious dent in the funding gap, which will at the same time inject some predictability into the Carter Centre's operational planning. And we know there are others out there who are keen to support this milestone achievement, and we invite them to join us in making it happen. And the background to this decision is this. The coalition government is making a stronger commitment to tackle neglected tropical diseases, the NTDs, which are a dreadful set of diseases, but which have shown a great track record in terms of results and value for money. The impact of these diseases, both on human suffering and at the household and community level, is considerable. People are debilitated for months and can't work or attend school. These are diseases of poverty that are further trapping people within poverty. So earlier this year, we commissioned some exploratory work that assessed the burden of disease, the costs, and the results across a range of NTDs, including those we're already supporting. Now, the findings have showed us that there are huge gains to be made in reducing the burden of these diseases. So we have decided to increase the level and scope of our involvement in preventing and controlling a range of NTDs. But before you all ask lots of questions about that in detail, we are genuinely still working out the modalities and will make further announcements and decisions over the next 6 months about our intent and our determination to make a significant contribution. But today is about Guinea Worm and celebrating and backing the success that the Carter Centre has brought us to today. And we hope the others will respond to our challenge and make sure that the funding shortfall is filled so that you can carry on your excellent work, Mr. President.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Bill and Melinda Gates describe themselves as impatient optimists. Somehow, I'm sure we can be cautious, impatient optimists. And as we've heard, there is good reason to be optimistic. It's worked, as President Carter has said. Since the Carter Center began leading the campaign to eradicate guinea worm in 1986, cases have dropped by 99.9%. Guinea worm has just been eradicated in Ghana. A huge success. So now, 95% of the remaining cases are in just one country, South Sudan. Unfortunately, there was also a new outbreak in Chad over the past year. So South Sudan and Chad are the priorities for the year ahead. This is a reminder of how important it is to complete the job of eradication. Until we achieve complete eradication, there is always the risk of new outbreaks in communities that have previously eliminated guinea worm. I want to underline that prevention is better than cure. Better for the patient, as you've seen in the documentary. And better for the budget, and who can afford not to worry about that these days? That's why the Gates Foundation is so focused on ensuring that poor people have the same protection from preventable diseases as people in rich countries. Because they can at least afford the treatment, or the cure, if it exists. Whether it's prevention from mosquitoes, or from sexually transmitted diseases, from diarrhea or polio. And prevention, of course, is all the more important when there is no cure, only painful treatment, as in the case of guinea worm. And that is why the Gates Foundation is so committed to the eradication of guinea worm. We have invested almost $90 million to date in the effort so far. And we are committed to seeing the job through. But we know that we cannot achieve the eradication of guinea worm ourselves. As you have heard today, and as you see in front of you, the effort to eradicate guinea worm is a partnership. The technical expertise of the Carter Center and the leadership of President Carter himself have created the opportunity to eradicate guinea worm. They have worked closely with the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, UNICEF, and the World Health Organization. The WHO will be the main partner providing support to governments once a country has been guinea worm free for a year. Communities and political leaders in endemic countries are crucial to the success of the program. And we see DFID as a key financing partner with us in the fight against all neglected tropical diseases, and in particular against guinea worm. So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation strongly welcomes the announcement by Minister Stephen O'Brien this morning that Britain is ready to contribute up to one-third of the remaining finance needed for guinea worm eradication. We see the DFID challenge as inspiring. We believe it will inspire new donors to come forward and join the partnership to eradicate guinea worm. And we also look forward to continuing our partnership with DFID to address these diseases of poverty, including guinea worm. Only together can we be successful in eliminating and controlling these diseases. Guinea worm disease is set to become the first parasitic disease to be eradicated, the first disease to be eradicated without the use of a vaccine. It is a huge inspiration for what we can achieve in global health if we are determined and impatient optimists. Thank you.
Thank you. Distinguished panel members, diplomatic corps, ladies and gentlemen, the coming together of partners, especially the pledges made by DFID and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, today is extremely important, and I hope your leadership will inspire other partners to come forward. Your pledges today give the Carter Center, WHO, UNICEF, and the governments in endemic countries the means to finish a job. We need to rid the world of a worm, and this is a fiery worm, a long worm in terms of the months of suffering, pain that you have seen in women, in children, and men. For most of the world, ladies and gentlemen, this is an invisible worm, out of sight, out of mind, because it affects the poorest of the poor, people living in remote rural areas, beyond the end of the road. Just imagine, inaccessible. And this is a very old misery, human misery, with descriptions going back as far as to Greek and Egyptian writings. We are at the best of time in terms of seeing the lowest number of cases, and you have heard from Dawn, the achievement over the last 25 years, the efforts, the joint efforts of the governments themselves, the endemic countries, and of course, you know, the leadership of President Carter. You bring together the world's leaders, partners, and development agencies. And of course, you know, WHO and UNICEF would always be inspired by your leadership and be there to do the job with you. This is worth celebrating, from 3.5 million to less than 900 cases, well, 900 to be exact, 969 cases by the August, end of August this year. We have never seen this kind of achievement. It is worth celebrating. But as Mr. Stephen O'Brien said it, we need to be very cautious. There are also dangers. It is much easier to spot a forest fire than to single out a smoldering twig. This is the best way I could describe it. The last cases of any eradication of a disease is the most costly and the most difficult. But with today's pledges, we can step up the intensified surveillance that is very much needed by countries supported by WHO and UNICEF to find and contain the last cases, the last worms, and we must move to make a very ancient disease an archaic one, because the inequity that we have seen and we have witnessed in the video is intolerable. It's intolerable. The do-good spirit of the different government, especially in this financial austerity, is commendable. And I want to thank you once again for your commitment, and I hope that your challenge can bring more partners. And I see some very good partners, potential partners in the audience. I hope you would be inspired by the leadership of many of the leaders so far, like Gates Foundation and so on. We must not allow, you know, finance be the only reason to stand in the way to get the job done. And on that, once again, I thank you for your attention, and I thank the people of UK, while I'm in London, for the do-good spirit of the people. Thank you.
All right, I'd like to open the floor now for a few questions, with the reminder that this is a press conference about guinea worm eradication. Peter from the BBC, I'd ask you to please stand, identify yourself and your institution.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. My name is Peter Okwoche. I'm Nigerian, and I work for the BBC World Service. President Carter, I'd just like to ask you, you've been involved in the eradication of guinea worm in Africa for over 20 years. You've been an observer at countless elections across the continent. You've mentioned South Sudan. You played quite a prominent role in the independence of South Sudan just a couple of months ago. Why has Africa been such a cause to you?
Well, as I said in my opening remarks, the Carter Center's program is designed to go into the places where the need is greatest, and quite often where the needs, although great, are neglected by others. You know, if the United States government or the World Bank and so forth are taking care of a problem, we don't go there. And so there's no doubt that the most neglected disease in the most remote and unconnected villages was guinea worm. And this was also in an area of the world where strife was prevalent. Sudan was a special case. For instance, we couldn't get into Sudan, into southern Sudan, to deal with guinea worm because of the war that was going on there between North and South Sudan. So I went to Sudan in 1995 and eventually negotiated a ceasefire that lasted now more than 6 months, which they still call the guinea worm ceasefire, because President al-Bashir in the north and John Garang in the south both knew that their people suffered from guinea worm, and they wanted the Carter Center to come in and eradicate this blight on their people. So eventually they agreed with me to have a ceasefire. And so you see that in this particular case, to answer your question, there was an inseparable connection between peace on the one hand and doing away with guinea worm on the other. And in many cases, this has been prevalent in other countries as well. One of the reasons it took us so long in Ghana was strife and violence in the northern part of Ghana. And this has been the case in other countries as well. So quite often the people see, the leaders of nations, the kings, the presidents, and the prime ministers and others see that conflict among their people is quite often the major obstacle to the improvement of a social quality of the people's lives, because you can't deal with any kind of disease, malaria or AIDS or anything else, if a war is going on and health workers can't be trained or dispersed throughout that region. So I'm glad you asked the question, but you see how you can't separate the quality of life with an emphasis on peace among the people.
Thank you. Next question. Yes.
Mr. President, I don't want to lower the tone by asking about dollars, but a third of the funding, it's easy to talk in percentages, and sorry, John Snow, Channel 4 News. Mr. President, I don't want to lower the tone by talking cash, but we've had percentages and figures that don't quite mean anything. How much money is actually required to get this job done? How much cash?
Well, the total that we need, we estimate at $60 million. And that includes the final eradication of the specific diseases, but also an extended surveillance to make sure the disease doesn't come back. And that involves thousands of villages. In Sudan alone, I think I mentioned, we still have volunteers working in 6,000 villages right now. So I think the total would be in the neighborhood of $60
million.
$70 million. I'm corrected by my compatriots here. $70 million. So I'll let Stephen figure out the one-third value of that. If it was $60 million, I could do it quite quickly, but $70 million is more difficult.
Well, of course, converting
and we're talking dollars to pounds. Right?
Yeah, dollars to pounds, which is at least that at the moment, and we're not talking euros. But it's about £20 million in round numbers that we're talking about.
And is Gates up to £20 million?
Well, the challenge is issued.
Yeah, as Stephen says, the challenge is issued. We have invested $90 million to date in the effort, and that's ongoing work. But we've certainly heard the challenge today.
As have others.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, President. Thank you, Director General. To be honest, I know the horrible disease from this press conference. I think many Chinese people, they didn't know this disease. So I think if we send reports to China, they will care, they will be very concerned about that. May I ask for which channels for them? What should I do? Like volunteers, entrepreneurs, how much should we donate, and how the other measures we can do, especially for young people, because we represent Propeller TV. Many young people, they will look watch our TV. We want the concern about the global health, and they can take you as a good example to contribute for the society.
Thank you.
So thank you.
President Carter has asked me to respond to this question with great pleasure. I'm very pleased to hear this from you. You are very young, and you propose. I take it you put on the table a proposal that we should, you know, rally support from young people in China because they don't know about this disease. This is a fact, and we have said so. This is a disease that is invisible to many countries, and we will certainly consider mechanisms to raise political support, resources, and technical support from China and beyond. Thank you for that. I'll follow this up.
Thank you very much. Show me how to use it.
How to use what?
The pipe filter. This is used like a straw. You see the mesh in one end. It filters the water fleas containing the parasite out of the drinking water. I remind you, it does not filter out viruses and bacteria, but it takes the guinea worm out, and you suck it just like a straw. So it's intended for people, farmers, traders, people who are traveling when they're away from their homes to have a way of still protecting themselves.
Let me add one point. The Carter Center didn't invent this filter straw. It was done by nomads in the northern part of the desert in Mali and Niger and so forth. And when we couldn't get into southern Sudan because the war was going on, the Norwegian government volunteered to make for us 9 million of these filter straws. So we sent them into the war zone. And when I went to southern Sudan, I wore one around my neck. And John Garang, who was a leader of his southern Sudanese, he wore one around his neck. So by the time we were finally able to get our workers into South Sudan, the people had already been using these filter cloths on the straws. And so we had a very great reduction in the incidence of disease. So this was a case of people in the northern part of Africa and all the way to Norway. The straws were actually put together in Kenya and sent into southern Sudan before we could even go in to visit the villages. So you see what an international effort it's been.
Thank you. Dr. Molyneux. Yeah.
Thank you, Don. David Molyneux, the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine and the recently formed UK Coalition Against NTDs. I, in a sense, ought to declare a conflict of interest because I'm a member of the International Certification Commission. But one point I think I should raise and ask the panel's views on this. I've been a member of leading the commission team into Burkina Faso this time last year. One of the impressive things about that particular mission and actually confirming that that country had stopped transmission was, one, the percentage of villages who had access to clean water. And in fact, Burkina Faso was awarded a prize by the UN Secretary General last year for its coverage of clean water supplies, driven in part, I think, by the guinea worm program. The same applies in Mauritania as well. Yes. But the other impressive thing about that particular mission was that the information system from the village level and the village volunteer commitment to reporting rumors on the one hand and transmitting information up the value chain to the Central Ministry of Health was profoundly impressive. And in over, I think, 100 districts our team visited, there was not one health center that didn't have the statistics on the wall or the guinea worm posters on the wall. Now, this is a comment, but I think it's important that we widen the view of the impact of this program into clean water, because it was your initiative, Don, in the beginning of the 1980s to link the guinea worm program to the International Water Decade. And the impact on diarrheal disease, for example, must have been profound. I realize this is another question, but it's a comment. But I think in the terms of the development, which the Honourable Minister has mentioned, this is an important key, and it also strengthens health systems right from the base. Thanks for the opportunity to comment. And thank you, everybody, for their contributions.
Thank you, David. We'll take one more question.
Sarah Bosley from The Guardian newspaper. Two things, actually, sorry. One is, do you have any sense of who is going to come forward to fill the funding gap now to match, one hopes, what DFID is putting in? And the second one is that have you been able in any way to piggyback on the back of the guinea worm eradication program? Actually, because you are accessing remote villages where a very great deal needs to be done, is not happening. as you say, the poorest people on the planet. So one assumes that you could also get malaria treatments in that, or you could do other things. So has any of that happened too?
I can answer the second part. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. That brings to the important point about integration. You use the term piggyback, and this is exactly what the World Health Organization is doing. We make use of other assets, like the surveillance team for polio disease surveillance, to identify cases. And that also goes back to the earlier comment about the power of information and the power of media and community sharing of knowledge. Intelligence, we need intelligence. To me, surveillance is to pick up early case, early warning, so that we can go in and control. And the integrated approach to disease surveillance management is precisely one success factor that we are seeing, particularly in Ghana. Thank you.
Yeah, perhaps I can help answer Sarah's question in a couple of ways. The first is, of course, discussions are taking place. We haven't reached a day without having a series of discussions, and I very much hope that that will produce a response to the challenge that has been put out, and we'll be able to fill this funding gap. But I think in terms of any identities, I think that would be premature. So I'm sorry to disappoint you and your potential story there, Sarah, on that one. But as far as the integration is concerned, I think this is absolutely crucial because it links to what David Molyneux was saying a moment ago. In everything that we're doing at DFID is looking to get the maximum impact to cover the most vulnerable people, not least in conflict and immediate post-conflict areas where the greatest need is. And to get the value for money is demonstrated by ensuring that we do get integration. Of course, you have to make a very good technical appraisal about what is at times the sort of lead and the lag, or in common parlance, the cart and the horse. But for instance, in dealing with malaria, by getting nets out, you're also, of course, going to have a major effect on things like tsetse fly and other things. But I think the base for water and sanitation, what is under the term WASH, which includes the hygiene side, which of course has such a significant effect mm-hmm. when it comes to other diseases, is absolutely vital. And this links very seriously with the whole prediction of how development is going to sit in context across the globe. When you look at the Foresight Report, which both my department co-commissioned with DEFRA, in looking at how do we predict the population of the planet going forward, how are we going to feed it, and it all boils down, if I can dare use the pun, to really understanding the use, distribution, and access to water, both for drinking and for irrigation, and therefore for the deployment of water across the planet. So in strengthening health systems, so much of what is done is going to leave a legacy of a strengthened health system, and yes, the piggybacking is now very much part of how you design in good development approaches to making sure that health results are achieved with the greatest impact and the greatest value for money. And that's why the Guinea worm has been such a very good precedent, not led by Mr. President, to ensure that we learn these lessons and we don't have to relearn them, that we apply these lessons in so many of the diseases which we're now looking at to expand into the broader context of these NTDs, many of which have been held behind the great challenge of AIDS, TB and malaria, where the Global Fund has been so much in the lead. Because if they're not immediately apparent killer diseases, it's been much more difficult to get attention for them, and yet they can have just as devastating an impact upon the way people are able to live and to have aspirations. And that's why South Sudan is such a good country to focus on, because now we have a new opportunity to really make all this learning well applied and to achieve these results very quickly.
We've allowed 1 to 2 minutes for President Carter to have the final word, if he wishes.
Sir, I think you brought a very good point to bear. When we go into a place, I'll just take Southern Sudan, for instance, we have personally trained about 12,000 local volunteers who are not paid. And we've taught them the rudiments of health care. And one of the aspects of good health is to have water that's clean to drink. And with the help particularly of UNICEF, in addition to the filter cloths that we've described, quite often they've been able to drill deep wells so that the people could have a reliable supply of water that would be free of all diseases. And when I would say the psychological benefit to this is quite often the people whom we have served in this project. In the rest of our lives, many of them have never known success. They've never attempted anything that really succeeded. And quite often their relationship to foreigners has comprised unbroken promises. And when we go in and teach them how they can correct their own problem, then they not only learn the rudiments of healthcare on a broad base concerning sanitation, good water, and so forth, but they learn how to be self-sufficient. And they gain a degree of self-respect and confidence in the future and hope that things will be better for their children that they had never known before. So I would say the practical effect of eradicating this disease is equaled by the psychological or social effect of the building of a spirit or hopes or confidence of the people themselves.
Thank you, Mr. President. The press has asked for a picture, a photograph of you holding a water filter, pipe filter, before you leave the stage. There you go.
These were put together by women workers and primarily in Nairobi, Kenya, financed by the government of Norway, right?
And NGOs and other NGOs, government and yes. Industry. I'd like to thank you all for your attendance and thank especially here the Honorable Minister and the UK government for their contribution and our other partners, including Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and WHO. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.